And we are live. So just a little bit by introduction. Welcome to Opportunity Exchange Part 2, where we foster the exchange of ideas and practical solutions with the focus of empowering those who don't have the opportunities that others have through a dialogue and a collaboration. And back in Round 2, we have Igor, who, as far as I'm aware, Igor, you still live in LA, you still work in LA, you still have fun in LA. Nothing's changed?
Not well, maybe what changed, and it was a good change, is now we have a car. So our experience has changed quite a bit. But
So that's the segue to the last episode. Yep. So the Honda Civic has moved in, has it?
Has moved in, and it survived 300 miles, I don't know, like a long trip last holiday. So we are very happy with it.
So, how old is it? It's a 2013.
12.
Isn't it? 2012. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. How many miles on the clock?
It has 150,000, yeah, 150,000 miles.
And it's a gasoline or a diesel?
It's gasoline.
Okay.
Which is interesting, by the way, because when we talk to our friends in Brazil, they get really surprised because 150,000 miles is a lot, like for a car in Brazil.
Well,
here in the United States, it's quite regular. I think people drive so much, and there are so much highway driving that you cover like 10 miles in a blink of an eye. So here it's regular to buy a car, of course, a secondhand car with 150,000 miles. But in Brazil, everyone gets surprised.
I mean, that's 220,000 kilometers. And over here in Europe, you would probably back away from that kind of car because it's nearing the end of its life.
Mm-hmm.
Life cycle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Here we have seen lots of cars with this mileage being sold. But also talking to people, we figure out that's kind of regular. Of course, you want to have a car with less mileage, but it's fine. You know, it will do its job of moving us in the next years.
Great. Yeah. I think the potential of a car was made. I saw it in Morocco I think we were there 2012 or 2013. And they have these taxi systems. They have the petit taxis where it's a little Peugeot 205 runabout, and it just stays within the city limits of wherever that is. And we were in Fez in northern Morocco, and we were in this really, really run-down red Peugeot 205. And I was sitting in the front, and I sort of leaned over to the driver to have a look at the odometer. And if I remember rightly, it had something like over 700,000 kilometers on it. Mm. And it was still going, so... I think there's a lesson in that.
Yeah, I think it all depends on the kind of mileage, right? I don't know anything about cars, but that's my perception, that if you drive cars like on, let's say you have to drive your car on dirty roads, maybe 100 kilometers is a lot, right? Mm. But if you have to drive in highway,
yeah,
and also sometimes I think about that. Sometimes I see like very old cars around, like, and you can see that they're not like collection cars. They are cars that people, like the person is actually using it for his life, you know. And I ask myself, like, if this car is running like why wouldn't a Honda Civic 2012 run? You know, like, come on.
Exactly. Exactly. So how has this changed apart from, and this sort of leads to our topic. How is this going to impact you? Does Mari now take the car to university, or does she still walk? I mean, you're sort of, I think, within reasonable distance, or does it sit in front of the house for 5 days a week and then gets wheeled out, brushed down and taken for a run on the weekends?
Yeah, it sits on the our garage here for work days.
Mm.
We don't usually use it on work days because we like to bike a lot. So Mari goes biking to the university. Okay. I go to the jiu-jitsu by biking. Mm. So that's our lifestyle. But it changed in the sense that now when we do plans, we kind of don't have this filter of public transportation, because before every plan we would check how to get there by public transportation, and 90% of the time we would give up because we thought it would be very complex, would take too long. So it's not more in the equation. So now we just we use other criteria to choose where we want to go spend time. That's the main advantage. So now we just like we try to figure out what we want to do, where we want to go, and we don't have to figure out the public transportation part.
Mm.
That's the main thing.
Life has become a little bit easier, at least on the weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Which sort of brings us to the topic, urban life versus city life versus country life, sorry. So you live in a town, just a little town on the California Pacific coast. No one really knows about it. It's only got how many? About 8 million people, something like that. Yeah, just
17.
17. 17.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's a drop in the ocean.
Yeah.
nothing really happens in LA. It's a pretty boring place. And I live in a tiny, tiny village directly on the German-French border, about 10 kilometers away from that. And we have a population of around 700 people, plus minus. no shops, no post office, no facilities, no nothing.
Wow.
And it's paradise.
Is so, it like, do you miss, because it's hard to find the advantage of living in a big city nowadays, because like work, you can work remote, like buy stuff. You don't have to go to shops. You can buy online. But one thing that I still see as advantage of living in a big city is having things to do, like having things to explore, people to meet, events, you know, that's the only advantage I can think of. So don't you miss doing different stuff? Because I imagine the place you live, it's like you don't have, like if you want to do something on the weekend, you don't have this plenty of options, right?
You'd actually be surprised.
Really?
Because I think the mentality, I suppose you've got to try and put this whole thing into context. So if anyone wants to look at a map, we live in the top northeastern corner of France, where it sort of pokes into Germany.
Mm.
And the mentality here is also not French. We live in an area called Alsace, which historically has belonged partly to Germany, has belonged to France. It's sort of been pushed back and forth as politics got in the way of ordinary life.
Mm.
And that has made that sort of created a mentality over here where people become very independent and resilient and self-sufficient.
Mm.
And the village that I live in, there are, let's put it this way, my neighbor told me many years ago, he said, I've got 30 family members here in the village. I don't need outside people. And he used to be, before he retired, he used to be the director of the wine cooperative, which sort of provides the financial support of this village. So, if you're looking for distraction of doing things and getting out and doing things, then compared to a big city, no, we don't have that. But it is accessible. And here, families tend to play an important role. Grandmothers are the backbone of child minding where we are. And everything is centered around families, which the downside of it is, if you're an outsider like Mary and I are, it's not that easy to integrate. Because you have maybe three or four or five huge families. They all have the same surname, and they don't get out much. So their vision is sort of their mentality is quite closed. If you come along with our background, which is sort of fairly international, then I cannot speak to my neighbor one house up because we have absolutely nothing in common.
Really?
Yeah, we sort of greet each other and we talk about the weather, and then the conversation fizzles out because, you know, there's nothing wrong with it. But you know, he came from another village a couple of kilometers away, and he's a self-sufficient tenant farmer, you know, and that's what his life is. Well, doesn't need the conversation.
And but you and Mary, I'm trying to imagine like your life in a weekend, because work days you work, of course. But on weekends, like what do you guys do when there is like you guys are not working and there is no any compromise to be in? Like what you guys do usually? Just stay at home, you guys? What's the plan usually?
We tend to stay at home a lot, because we appreciate the beauty of where we live, and we have a beautiful house, and we have sort of a nice area to sort of sit outside. We stay at home. Saturdays we tend to go shopping, just sort of the basic grocery stuff. And Sundays, quite happily sit at home, read, what take on a movie, something like that, you know, something on a video that we have, or sorry, a DVD that we have, or something like that. And just chill. And we have this, especially in the summer, we have this tradition of what we call drinks on the deck. So around 6 o'clock, we will down tools. And we will sit outside and have a couple of glasses of wine and some nibbles and just, you know, watch the sun go down if we're sort of hanging around long enough. So it's really very relaxed and quiet and peaceful.
And do you miss or Mary miss doing other things, or you guys are totally happy with this lifestyle?
I sometimes get an itch, and then I sort of want to go south. So to put this into perspective, 65 kilometers further south is city of Strasbourg, and it's got a population of about 300,000 people. It's a fairly important city in European politics. It's this one of the homes of the European Parliament. The Council of Europe sits
How
there,
far is it?
65 kilometers. So I can be there.
It's quite close.
I can be there in 45 minutes. And it's a court of human rights. So it is. It's for European politics. It's actually a really important city. So we can do that and go down there and just sort of meander around and, you know, breathe in. Paris. We can be in Paris in 2.5, 3 hours, and we are like 500. We were 500 kilometers away from Paris. So we would drive down to Strasbourg and then hop on a TGV, And we could be in Paris in just over 90 minutes, spend the day there, and then come back in the evening. So take one of the first trains in, take one of the last trains back, and spend the day in Paris.
I feel like that's the best format, like live in a small town, which is far enough from a huge city to be calm and peaceful, but close enough to so you can get there within 2 hours. That's my dream place to live, you know.
Where the infrastructure works, yeah. And we were talking at the beginning about you in Los Angeles need a car, and you've got 18 million people around you, for the simple reason that the infrastructure, the public transport infrastructure, doesn't exist. Yeah. The nearest shop for us is 7 kilometers away. And I have walked from home to the town where all these shops are. It takes me an hour. Yeah.
Well, yeah, of course, you want a structure, but like if you live in a small town, you don't need structure. You need like electricity basically and water.
Water,
And
electricity.
internet.
Yeah. And that is key. So I have fiber optic internet connection here.
That's amazing you have that in such a small town. Like
Yeah.
in Brazil, it wouldn't be impossible. Like to a small town have this opt fiber.
Yeah. And that's my lifeline. And and here we are. Look, I'm sitting here in my I work from home, as you know. I work from home. I'm sitting in my little cubby hole. And I'm speaking to you in Los Angeles. And this is normal for me, and I speak with people around the world all the time. Yeah. And I don't actually have to travel. And the interesting thing is that the motivation to travel is decreasing slightly. I'm sort of beginning to wonder, why should I do this? Because I can, because I value the conversation. Maybe I'll get across to LA in the next couple of years. Maybe I won't. Yeah. Will it enhance my life? Yes, it will. Do I really need to go? I don't know. Yeah. As long as I have good con after the quality of the conversation for me is key. Yeah.
That's an important consideration. And sometimes talking online, it's more you can get deeper than in person. It's weird to think about that, but online, like you are in your environment, I am in my environment, so we are kind of relaxed and talking. Sometimes meeting in person, you for some people, I'm not like that, but for some people, it's not comfortable. So the conversation won't be so flowy as it usually is. But I agree with you. I think that's a sign we are getting old.
Yeah,
Because
I mean,
yeah, because yesterday, yeah, just to say some example, yesterday there's this huge jiu-jitsu competition, which is called ADCC. It's like the Olympics of jiu-jitsu, which happens in Las Vegas. And I had on my calendar to buy tickets to the ADCC, which will happen in August of 2024. And then I went to the website and I was like almost buying the tickets. And I just thought, like, why? Like, if I can watch here at my home in my computer, high quality, probably I watch more things than I would watch live because I would be sitting far away from where the fights are happening. Like, what's the point? So I just didn't buy it.
Yeah. And I mean, we have the same thing. I went to Rome a couple of years ago, and it was a really horrible experience because there were like armies of tourists marching through the cities. The queue to visit the Vatican was, I think, 2 hours long. So I sort of said, okay, not important, because I knew that if I went online and had a look at a couple of videos, I would get a more detailed view of the beauty of the Vatican and the artworks in there than sort of craning my neck and being pushed forward by the masses behind me. Yeah. Yeah.
Did you ever watch this documentary? I think it's on YouTube. It's called The Art of Travel by Alain de Botton.
I've read the book.
Oh, I didn't know that he had a book about that, but
Yeah,
that's a good one.
And the opening, it's a really good book because it is all about expectations of traveling and managing. And in the first chapter, he tells the story of a person who had been sort of at home in his own castle or grand house or something for an enormous amount of years. And he ventures out to go traveling somewhere, and he doesn't get very far because he just doesn't like it anymore. And he goes back home and stays at home and does not set foot outside, you know, a small radius around his house. And I'm becoming more and more like that. But then I know that as a kid, I traveled an awful lot. So I saw the world as a kid. So it doesn't actually really make me that curious. And when I sort of, and the beauty of it is what has also changed is that Mary, in her youth, didn't do any traveling, whereas I did all the traveling. And that's completely flipped. She does all the traveling professionally. She has been to 65, 66 countries in the last 10 or 12 years. But and this is sort of the story that I tell to show what it's really like. Mary had to inspect a hotel in Cairo, just around the corner from the pyramids. And I said to her, look, find the time, somehow scrape out the time to somehow get to the pyramids and have a look at them. People are paying you to travel to Cairo, to do some work. So find a possibility. She couldn't, because the hotel was such a disaster that the debrief took longer than anticipated. The GM had a lot of questions. And she had a taxi to get to the airport to catch her flight to, I don't know where she was. So she was so close, and yet she couldn't actually get to these places. Yeah.
That's a good story to illustrate that it's not like traveling, it's not necessarily exploring and seeing. In this documentary / book, there is one point that I find very interesting. I always think about that Alain de Botton, he's on a cruise ship and they stop somewhere. Maybe it's Rome. I don't know. They stop somewhere in Europe. And then he decides not to go out. He decides to stay in the ship. So he can keep, and the way he says, I think it's beautiful. Like he says, he prefers to keep the idea of the city that he had in his mind than seeing the actual experience, because he knew it would be totally different.
And that's
exactly the point about traveling. I think like there is the expectation which is made of, like, I think at least as humans, we wouldn't have this kind of expectations to travel as crazy if it wasn't a market, you know. I have this feeling because it's, if you think, like, if you reason about that, it's a lot of work, it's expensive. You don't really see that many things if you go to a very touristic place. You get tired. It's not a good experience, right? But, like, we are expected to do that if you want to be perceived as interesting people.
Yeah, and that's, I think, one of these cliches for... My English teacher in Sydney, Australia, when I was a kid doing my my high school certificate, which sort of is the piece of paper that you work towards to get to university, he once said something really interesting. He said, we will travel to the other end of the world and we will not know our own backyard. And this was really brought home to me when Mary was in hospital. It was a 20-minute drive door to door, and it took me through breathtakingly beautiful valley. So I had to, it was sort of like two valleys further on. So I had to go up a mountain or a hill of about 400 meters, go down on the other side and then meander along a beautiful, beautiful valley, and then turn left and then go to the hospital. And I did this trip, I think, for 6 weeks every day, and I got ne never got tired of the view, and every day it looked different, yeah. And you sort of ask yourself, you don't really appreciate the beauty of your own environment because you're constantly trying to see that what's on the other side of the planet, and it's probably not much different than home, yeah.
Yes, that's very interesting. I don't think I ever told you that, but when I came back from my road trip in Europe, hitchhiking, I would say, in Europe, one of the reasons I wanted to stop, like I was traveling for 6 months, 7 months, and I decided to go back to Brazil because I had to build something. Like I was just being around, but not actually building anything, not building relationships, professional things. So I wanted to go back to Brazil, and when I got back to Brazil, I wrote a blog post for a very popular magazine in Brazil, about like 12 truths about traveling, something like that. I don't remember the exact title, and I got so many hating in the comments because people were very very frustrated because that was my take, right? I was telling that traveling, like, sometimes is not good. You get sick, it's terrible. You will always be seen as a tourist. You won't really experience the culture of the place, and blah blah blah. And people got really mad. Like, it's still on. It's in Portuguese. I will send you the link if you want to read with translation. But the comments, they are hardcore because people, I felt like I touch in something very deep in people, you know, like they want to travel, they have this expectation, and there's this guy telling them that this is not true, you know, so they got it personal.
I think there is, you might have heard of them. There's an airline in Europe, an Irish airline called Ryanair, and they really revolutionized, I think, along with Southwest in the States, they really revolutionized air travel. And basically, you pay for everything that you want extra. So the base airfare is extremely cheap, but then they build in add-ons with all the luggage scenarios and the check-in scenarios, and at the end of the day, what looks to be very cheap is actually quite expensive in comparison. That said, if you're it's really attractive for young people because you could, not anymore, but you could in its day, you could fly to another European capital for less than the price of a restaurant meal,
That's crazy in Europe.
or a a Big Mac and a couple of drinks at McDonald's or something like that. It was dirt cheap. Bottom line of this is that Ryanair actually did more for European unification and uplifting the European Union values because they gave everybody the opportunity to move. So that was a good thing. Yeah.
That's a good point, yeah. I never thought about that.
Yeah, so the politics of that was good, but if you just had to put up a lot of with a lot of stuff there. Talking about traveling and so on, when you were beginning to explore Los Angeles, you and Murray, you commented fairly often on seeing people with mental health issues on public transport. And now you sort of we're comparing big city with a rural environment. And I would say that where I live in the whole vicinity, mental health is probably not an issue. So how do you deal with the seeing people who suffer from mental health issues? How do you sort of cope with it.
So I have the good guy response and the official and then like the real life response. So the good guy, of course, you feel sorry and you think on like what you could do to help. Like in the first month here, it was really hard because since we were using public transportation a lot, like we would see all the time, and like we had this sense that that's a problem that won't be fixed ever. So like there, from this point on, it will just get worse. So I still think like that. I don't see it get improved. I can't think on any solution, to be honest. And the like the real life response, you do as everyone do, like your brain just ignores it. Like that's a survival mode. You just ignore it and keep living, you know? Because first, there's nothing you can do. There's very little you can do. And second, there are so much and you become insensitive. Like you just ignore it because you see all the time everywhere, like in huge amounts. And that's just one more thing that you ignore. That's the reality of Los Angeles. Like maybe you would think different, but everyone who came to Los Angeles, and I talked about that, like everyone who is living here, but it's from other place, they had the same shock in the beginning. Like, oh my God, what's going on in this city? You know, like, what the hell? Why there are so many crazy people around? Why some things don't work? Why some streets are so dirty? Why there are people like leaving the streets, like they are like building houses of mattresses in the streets? You have this shock, right? But then like it's a survival mode, like you have to ignore it so you can live your life. That's what happened in Los Angeles. But that's I don't know, like I have read a few articles and news about that. I use it not to believe on that, but now I am believing that it's every empire in the history had its decline, right? I think we are living a decline. Like United States is like it's clearly on decline. You know, I was reading today's morning that since 2009 there are more Mexicans leaving United States than coming in. That's crazy, right?
Wow.
So that's an empire in decline, and I'm kind of curious because I'm living that. I can see things getting worse and worse, and I like with no hope of being fixed. But of course, it's very sad, right? Because like people who doesn't have options to leave United States, they will be in trouble, I think, especially if they don't have money. A last comment. I'll stop my rant in a few minutes. But the last thing that I just realized yesterday that something very crazy is going on, like very absurd. And which is the following: people now like leaving the streets is becoming normal stuff, right? I noticed that because people are starting to build their houses in quotes in the sidewalks, and they make the sidewalk like their
property.
How do you say it? Yeah, not property, but the area you have in front of the house. I always forget.
The front garden, yeah, the front garden.
The front garden, like they make, so they place tables. It's a normal thing, and you are starting to see online like tips to live in the streets, like you know, like 15 things you should do if you are living in the streets, like best place to live in the streets in Los Angeles. So it's becoming a thing, you know, like a category of living. Like so, you can live in an apartment, you can live in a house, you can live in a condominium, and you can live in the streets, which is absurd, but it's happening. That's what I just noticed. Like that's something that's happening right now in Los Angeles. It's becoming normal to live in the streets because the housing crisis here is so huge and impossible to fix that regular people, like for example, if I didn't have the option to go to Brazil, and I had a health issue here in the United States and I had to use all my savings, I would be one of them. Like I am closer to living in the streets United States than living as a rich person, right? That's something absurd that's going on.
Yeah, I mean, because this is this sort of totally distorts the picture because everybody has this impression that the United States is this gigantically powerful country that can solve everybody's problems, and it probably can, but it can't solve its own problems at home, or it doesn't want to. So
Yeah, that's true.
does this mean, I mean, you the reason we're talking about this is because you spent Thanksgiving in a small town north of San Francisco, just outside of San Francisco, and it looks like a really nice place. And you and Mari were sort of thinking that maybe this is sort of a template that we could move to. May not be that town, it may not be in California, but it's sort of be forming an idea that the future of both of you is not in a big city, but in a small town. Maybe not as small as where I live, but certainly sort of 8 to 10,000 people. Does what you see every day in your normal routine emphasize this desire to leave? I mean, you've only been in LA for a couple of 4 or 5 months, but you see the ugly side of it. Does it motivate you to say we don't want to live here?
Yes, and it's not totally on Los Angeles. Like before moving here, I had this kind of thought that living in a small town is smarter. Now, but especially when we have kids, like we have plans of having a family, especially when we have a family, that will be even more important. And yes, like because I am a very lucky guy in terms of I work from home. I don't have to go to grocery stores. They come to my door. So I don't have to deal with 90% of people who works in other places and have to commute, have to deal with. So I'm very lucky in this sense. But it's still, like when I have to go out to go to jiu-jitsu to walk with my dog, I experience things that that are ne negative, and I wouldn't experience in a small town. So I have to be careful. There are so many cars. People are very rush and hostile. Not always, of course, but I would say the majority of time the people are more towards hostile than kind, as in every major city I live in. I don't know if there is a city which is different. And also like everything I get here that I value, I would get in a small town. So the only reason we live here is because we have two. That's where Mari is studying and working. But yeah, that's the reason, was the most rational thing to do, I think.
How do you think, I mean, you said that you're going back to Brazil for Christmas. You've been in this intense LA bubble now for 4 months. How do you think you will react when you get out of this bubble, go back to your familiar surroundings with your respective families, and be able to make a clearer comparison between your homes, the hometowns, and this monster called LA? Do you think you might have sort of a negative culture shock in reverse?
I think it might happen. But I don't think it will, but that there's a possibility. Yeah, I have good feelings about going first because now I value more things in Brazil than I would that I would value when I before coming to Los Angeles. And also it's just good to spend time since we are visiting, like we are planning to like optimize our time for things we want to do and spend time with people we want to spend. So we will not really live like the Brazilian experience, right? As normal people who work, study, etc. So we are going as tourists and we know where to go. So the margin for error is very low. So I think it might happen, but would be hard to have a bad experience.
So, what advice would you, if we took at this opportunity exchange, a lot of people are drawn to the bright lights of a big city or the opportunities that there are. You can go to 20 different places at the drop of a hat. And then you have the reality that a lot of people also bring with them a lot of problems, and it's expensive. So a person living in a small town wanting to go to the big city, what would you tell him?
Do you mean like moving to a big city or just visit?
No, just moving to a big city. You know, our friend Max, who sort of wants to go to because he doesn't see a perspective in the village that he lives in, or she. What advice would you give Max?
So something that of course, in my case, it wasn't possible doing costs and logistics, but something that I would do the next time I move to another city, especially if it's a big city, is to go sorry. Is to go before let's say you can book Airbnb for 2 weeks and go before and see by yourself, like just see by yourself the neighborhood. Like walk around, talk to people, to people walk, like as I mentioned in the previous call, talk to hairdressers, because the experience you have when you do that is totally different. It's not like slightly different, it's totally different from what you read online, right? So that's something I advise everyone. If you have the chance, even the, of course it will cost money, but I think it will be all worth it. If it's not something crazy, it will, like the investment will pay off. See by yourself where you want to live. And the second, it's like commuting. It's the biggest pain in the ass of every big city. I'm sorry, other sorry. I'm getting too used to English.
I mean, you know, I mean the commute from the first floor to the ground floor where my office is. I mean, you know, that takes me all of 1 minute, and even that's too long now.
It's complicated. Hard life. You have a
It's
hard life.
yeah.
Yeah, like if you talk to someone who lives in a huge city, probably like the and you ask them the top 10 things they hate about the biggest city, probably like 80% will be about commuting. So the public transport, like the city is dangerous, everyone is rushed, a lot of cars, so it's all almost everything related to commuting. So try to reduce this as much as you can. That should be a priority of everyone living a small in a big city, especially if you have to go every day to some place to work. That's the number one priority. Everything else you can handle. Like if you don't have grocery store near you can handle that. Like if I know if you can't find the house you want exactly, you can handle that. But commuting will be your source of unhappiness in a big city.
Here's a story. As you may or may not know, this is my second life, not the virtual reality one, but a real reality one. And my first life, I used to work in the hotel business, and I worked in one very fine establishment which still stands today. It's called the London Hilton on Park Lane. It was then and still is a humongously expensive hotel, and it attracted a certain clientele. And one day, I was working at the reception desk, and one day I was checking in a person, and we got into talking, and he worked for an airline leasing company. So they had planes and they would lease them out to the airlines. And this and I have to say this, when you work in the hotel business, you hear stories that are totally and utterly unrealistic to normal people. Anyway, we got into talking, and he told me, "Well, I actually live in Connecticut, but I work in London." And he flew with Concorde on a Monday morning. He would fly from JFK and be in London in 3 hours. And on a Friday night, he would do the trip back, fly from London to JFK, and then take a train up to Connecticut. And I said, you know, you'd probably be home quicker than some of us people living in England and doing a train hour. Never mind the expense. Of course, I mean, he had airline discounts, yeah. God knows what. So, and companies paid for it. So, you know, a £10,000 airfare round trip, London, JFK, you know, was pocket money. But, and I asked him, well, what's it like? He said, I hate it. It's really, really exhausting. And this is extreme commuting, yeah? So, and even I would drive, used to do, before I worked full-time from home, I would visit clients, and I would drive 4,000 kilometers a month without any difficulties. It was normal, yeah? Mm. And you sort of hate it, because all you do is sit around in a car, and it's hurts and it's painful and it's boring and the traffic gets on your nerves and so on and so forth. So commuting is a pain in the butt.
Yeah.
However,
yeah, like everyone's, yeah, go on.
However, if you live in the boonies like I do, and I like say the nearest shop is 7 kilometers away, you do a lot of driving in the country. We could not live without a car. It would be physically impossible. But I think the difference is that the countryside is beautiful. It's more relaxed. The pace of life is slower. So maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think there is like a magic solution for anything in life. But I think everyone should like commuting. That's something that people should try to remove from their lives. You know, like that's the number one priority for happiness. Like. I it's hard to think on another thing that will contribute to your happiness if you remove that with such a potential, right? So it's very hard because everything else is very complex. But commuting, it's universal. No one likes to commute. Like yeah. I have friends who love to drive, but they don't like to commute. Commute is different. Driving is something. Commuting is another thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and then I suppose if you're commuting on the LA freeways to get to from wherever you are to downtown, and you're stuck in a 6-lane highway and it's bumper to bumper.
Like you are dealing with what people have the worst, which like when they are in cars they get crazy and rude people. I don't know what happened. That's something probably have done some research on that because it's very curious. Like people get in their car and they transform themselves, like they become like evils, you know. So you are dealing with the worst of human beings.
Yeah, definitely. So to wrap this up, if you are thinking, I mean, this is still a long way down the road for you and Mari, but if you are thinking of moving to small town somewhere. Would you take your own advice and try and sort of test live in the town or in the area for a couple of weeks to see what it's like, even though it's probably logistically and infrastructurally not as easy to do as in a city?
Yeah, I would do that. That's the plan. When we move next city, of course, if it's to another country, maybe it's more difficult. Mm-hmm. But if it's the United States, we want to spend some time there because... So sometimes very small changes make a big difference. For example, we like the place we live. Like it's downtown, but we feel safe here. We walk with our dog. It's a good place, right? But we live in front of an avenue, which is very noisy, right? So if we live like 3 blocks away, it would be quiet. But that's the sort of thing that you can't see online, you know?
Yeah.
So I think it's worth it most of the times. The car as well. Like if you spent 1 month in Los Angeles before moving here, probably would like choose to buy a car right in the first week here. And we wouldn't leave a lot of negative experience we leave it.
Yeah. And I suppose the apartment around the corner, 3 blocks away, where it's a nice quiet street, is probably twice as expensive as the one that you've got at the moment. Yeah. Because the quiet factor just boosts up the rent.
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. That's a good question because we saw houses and apartments like down the block that were like in this price range. Of course, we didn't look into the details. We don't know if they are good as this one, but I don't know if the price changed that much, to be honest, because a lot of people value being in the avenue because you go down, you have the bus stop, you have the subway, you know?
Yeah.
So, I don't know what's the if how the noisy really makes a difference in the pricing.
Well, I guess it's a difficult one for Max to close this off now because there are so many pros and cons of living in the country or living in the city. I think the ideal thing is to have a small town with a fantastic infrastructure so that you can have the best of both worlds. And I think that's where
That would be my advice. Like, don't live in a huge city. Like, if you have to be, unless you have to work in a big city, of course, but you have the if you have the option to work from home, live in a small town, like maybe 100 kilometers away from a big city, you will be way more happy.
And then you don't have to commute. So going to
You don't
town.
have to commute. Yeah, if you have to commute, I'm sorry for you. Like, try to find the closest as possible of your work and like deal with that, but meanwhile, try to find some remote work.
Exactly. Well, that's for people like us who can do that's not a problem. I saw a, I'm going to close this one with a joke. I have a cartoon in a cartoon book to say that the train was being was the train from somewhere outside of London to London was delayed because the driver was working from home.
Yeah,
So
that's something
okay,
to consider.
Igor, we have not come to a conclusion, but it doesn't matter. Thanks for your time
Thank you, my pleasure.
to have a look at opportunities exchange, and we'll take this one to another discussion topic in a couple of weeks.
Cool, see you there.
See you then.
Bye bye.